out there somewhere in the gloom, you know. Oh, I can read, but I'm worried that you're going to fall asleep. Do you want more light? Yeah, un poco más. Yeah, it's really good. Also, we're experimenting a little bit with the schedule. Maybe you noticed, or maybe you didn't. Just this month, doing a little bit different. What happens each Wednesday evening? Usually, there's a regular pattern, but then also the schedule on the Dharma talk night. Trying to figure out how to apportion our 2 hours perfectly. It's an endless quest. Doesn't seem to be quite enough time for two meditation periods. And then to have a talk, and then to have any time for discussion. But then you like have one meditation period, and you have Kinhin. We have a radical new Eno who extended the meditation period. I don't know if you noticed. You know, it's a little bit longer than usual. You noticed? Everyone else was too, you know, deep in samadhi to notice, except you. Should we have a little service or not? So not right now, but later if you have any. Brilliant feedback about the perfect schedule for Dharma talk night. That will still leave a little more than an hour for talk and discussion. We'd be interested. Seems good to do Kenyan just so somebody can go to the bathroom if they have to, just logistically. So yesterday morning, when I woke up yesterday morning, I was camped on the beach in San Clemente, California, in the sunshine, and I was just sort of marveling over that, you know, suddenly I'm here, and I was thinking, isn't it amazing, you know, modern transportation with airplanes that can go 500 miles an hour, you know, you can suddenly be in a whole different world, and it feels like way more than a week since last week when I was here, and that I was in a totally different thing, and you were all doing totally different things, and how amazing we all came back together. And then I was thinking, well, maybe travel just reminds us how it always is. You know what I mean? It's basically always that way. You know, every time we part, we're going off to completely different worlds to have incredible, rich adventures, which we may or may not notice that we're having, but we do. And it's sort of a miracle that we ever end up in the same place and same time again. Or are we in the same place and the same time? It's sort of hard to know. So maybe travel is good that way. And, you know, there's a tradition in Buddhism of travel, right? Which is pilgrimage. That we learn something about reality by shaking things up a little bit. But now that I think about it, I don't think it's really that there's anything that different from my experience having been yesterday morning in San Clemente, California on the beach from your experience, because you were in a totally different world than this one yesterday, too. Anyway, that was yesterday. So, welcome to the second of two talks. Maybe it's the second of three talks in the end. I decided it might be helpful to bring up the Lojong mind training slogans from Indo-Tibetan Buddhism, which our guiding teacher, Norman Fisher, brought up when he was here a couple of weeks ago. Not strictly speaking Zen teachings, but Mahayana and Vajrayana Buddhist teachings that are very relevant, for sure. And so I want to recap briefly what we talked about last week, for those who weren't here, and then talk about a few more, and then have some time to discuss. So these Lojong, which just means mind training, so Lojong mind training is like an oxymoron, but it's okay. So these are slogans that are used in most of the major schools of Tibetan Buddhism today as reminders and inspiration and like sort of a built-in course of study. And there's 57 of them maybe, 56, 57 slogans, some are really short, some a few sentences. And they're organized into 7 points. And the 7 points themselves are teachings. So last week we talked about 3 of the 7 points. And a little later, there's handouts. A little later we can look at the 7 points. So the first point was called, we talked about last week, is called preliminaries or preliminary practices. We talked about the importance of stabilizing our minds and our lives with meditation and regular spiritual practice as both preliminary to doing other kinds of spiritual practice, but that we, especially in Zen, understand preliminary practice to be ongoing practice. We don't think we're going to sort of get the preliminaries down and then forget about it. We understand that the sort of, you know, way to maintain a healthy heart and mind is to always be doing preliminary practices. And that the spaciousness and the sort of possibility of doing these practices is a sort of the engine or the sort of ground. It sort of creates the ground, which allows the teachings that we're going to go into to be transformational. That through meditation practice, we touch a sort of broader and sort of richer sense of our potentiality as human beings. And when we're in touch with that, these slogans can be transformational. If we're not so much in touch with that, they're like chores and problems and things we're not doing right and things that we're going to argue about because we don't like them and so on and so forth. And of course, both things always happen together. And so we talked about these preliminary practices, which basically just means what we think of as practice. Meditation, service, being with community, paying attention to what we're feeling, returning to the breath, all of these things are preliminary in this system. So that was the first point. And the first point only has one slogan in it, so it's pretty easy. And the one slogan of the preliminary practice is train in the preliminary practices. That's the slogan, so that's easy to remember. And the second point we talked about last week, called formal practice, is the sort of practicing in sort of the key sort of spiritual and philosophical underpinnings of all the teachings in the system. And we talked a lot about Choyang Trungpa, who was a Tibetan teacher who established major centers in Colorado and Vermont and Nova Scotia. And he really emphasized this formal practice point in his teachings on these mind training slogans, these Lojong slogans. And he said that the whole point of formal practice is to understand bodhicitta, bodhicitta. And so we talked a lot last week about bodhicitta, which is the mind of awakening. That if we, you know, notice what we think about and what our sort of general aspirations are moment to moment, we might notice that it tends to be like something like survival or getting through the day or not being as miserable as we could have been or something like that, you know. Or maybe feeling a little happy. That'd be nice too. But mostly about ourselves, right? Most of our, the vast majority of our thoughts, and you can do a little thought experiment. It would be great to do this. Notice, and you can do this in Zazen, and you can, then you can extend this to your regular life. Notice what percentages of your thoughts are about you. What percentage of your thoughts are about you, and what percentage are about other people or other things, other topics besides you. And it's usually a high percentage. And so we talked about bringing up this, the facility of our mind to actually not think about me, but to think about the potential for all beings to be completely happy, to really awaken to the joyful, sort of empty nature of reality. And so Choyang Trungpa really emphasized this bodhicitta, and you could read his book, which is called Training the Mind. I have a copy, you can look at it tonight. He's got a long chapter about bodhicitta. It's well worth reading. And in this point about bodhicitta called formal practice, we talked about two slogans. There's about eight of them. We talked about two of them. We talked about one which goes, regard all dharmas as dreams. Regard all dharmas as dreams. And I am pretty gung-ho about this one because it's really helping me. That when we take things so literally, you know, so rigidly to be solidly and sort of permanently true, you know, our own tendencies, our situation, when we feel so hemmed in and trapped, we're probably not seeing all dharmas, meaning all existence, as a dream. We're probably seeing it as very real and very sort of immutable and very, like, heavy, very, very weighty. And one thing about, see, regarding all dharmas of dreams, which I think I may have spoken about sloppily last time, was regarding all dharmas as dreams, regarding reality as a dream, does not mean like we're sort of like get to screw around and we don't have to do anything because what the heck, you know, it's just a dream. You know, who cares, you know? I can be a flake at work and get fired and it's just, I've lost my dream job, you know? Who cares, you know? It's not like that at all. Actually, regarding all dharmas as dreams frees us up to engage more with reality, not less. That it's our sort of fear and edginess and sort of reactivity to the sort of weighty substance of reality makes it harder for us to really engage in reality. So once it's a dream, we're like really freed up, you know what I mean? We can engage in it, you know, because what can go wrong, you know? Nothing can go wrong. It's a dream. And so therefore, we really want it to go right, you know? And it's not a problem when it doesn't. And so anyway, regarding all dharmas as dreams, frees us up and lets us be actually very flexible and very sort of intelligent and, you know, full tilt forward ahead, you know. But we can't fall on our face, right, because there's nothing to trip over. So it's great. So I'm really appreciating regarding all dharmas as dreams. I'm having a much better time with my job in particular because it's a dream. So we talked about that. And then we also talked about, three slogans in this second point about formal practice, bodhicitta. One was regarding all dharmas as dreams. And the second one we talked only a little bit about was actually a meditation instruction. The second slogan we talked about was, which I want to talk about more, it goes like this. Sending, it's a long one. Sending and taking should be practiced alternately. These two should ride the breath. Sending and taking should be practiced alternately. These two should ride the breath. And so this is a description of a meditation practice called Tong Len, which just means sending and taking. So you can make something sound very cool by using another language, Tong Len, you know. You know, if you speak Tibetan, it's like sending and taking, okay. And so Tong Len is kind of the Vajrayana version of metta practice, which many of us have practiced, and I think many of us have practiced Tong Len as well. And so I want to tell you a little bit about that practice, and we could all try it. I think it would be good to try it. And I've lately been trying it. I've heard about Tong Len forever, but for some reason it never like sort of caught my fancy. So now I'm into Tong Len now. I'm a big fan. And so what you do, there's many sort of ways to do it, but the sort of basic instruction is this. When you breathe in all the suffering and trouble and evil and bad stuff in the whole world. They're pretty simple. Just breathe all that in. And it's like you're like sucking in poison. You're breathing in poison. And you can visualize, one of the instructions is you can visualize this evil, badness, poison stuff as like black, sticky smoke. Probably pretty smelly, too. You know? That was just in L.A., right? So like smog, really dense smog. And you're breathing this in not because you're like dumb or something like that, or, you know, it's because you're a bodhisattva. You're a being who wants to help everybody else. So it's better that you have it. You can suck it in so that everyone else has less of it. So you're doing this altruistically. So altruistically, breathing in trouble, breathing in pain, breathing in unfortunate circumstances. And one instruction I saw said, breathe that in on your right nostril. That's probably going a little too far. Just breathe it in. And then when you breathe out love. You breathe out kindness. You breathe out everything that's beneficial and warm, accepting. And if you want to visualize something, you can visualize that like light, like white light, just emanating out, you know. Like in the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha like had this like bright white light on his forehead. And you do this over and over again. And like any practice, you really take it on as a practice. You know, you say, okay, this sounds a little weird, but I'll give it a try. And if I get bored with it and I think it's stupid in the middle of Zazen, I won't give up. I'll try again. And I'll try again. And I'll try again. And if all this sort of visualization and thinking becomes too heavy, you can relax a little bit. You can just sort of breathe in that sense of dis-ease or that sense of things not being quite right. That's the sort of background music of conditioned existence. You know, it doesn't have to be like visualizing, you know, murder and mayhem and, you know, children being killed in Darfur or something like that. Although you could do that. It would probably be good if you did that. But you don't have to. You could just breathe in that sort of sense. Ah, that sort of darkness. Breathe in just sort of the darkness. And then it's like you're a sort of purifying bodhisattva and you breathe out love. You breathe out warmth. And you can also, it also can be helpful in this practice to think of something in particular. You know, if there's something particular that's up for you in your life, you can breathe in your difficult relationship with your mother or something, you know. You can breathe in something that's particularly difficult in your life and breathe out contentment and joy and resolution and everything really being okay. And you can, in your breathing out, you can really give the world your entire heart. Just really, like I was saying earlier, I was alluding to this really, just give it all away. Just give it all away. And if you notice that you're like holding back a little bit when you're thinking about, like, you know, if you're doing this practice directed towards another person, which you're in some difficulty with, you can notice, you know, that if you're like holding back a little bit, which you probably will be, like, I can breathe in some of her suffering, but she deserves some of it. So then you notice that, and you breathe that in too. You know, you breathe in your own sort of narrowness and your own inability to fully love, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, there's more darkness, you know, it's coming right out of me, so you suck it back in, you know, before it gets out there. You know? So this is Tonglen, as I understand it, and probably other actual proper Tibetan teachers would explain it differently. And Norman has, I think, on his website, and we used to have this in the library, but I think the CD's all vanished. Norman's given, like, a long instructions on Tonglen practice too, so you can look on everydayzen.org if you are savvy about downloading sound files. You can listen, and if you're not, somebody can help you. So anyway, I didn't have time to talk about that last time, but that's one of the slogans. It's just like, do that. One of the slogans in formal practice is to actually do that. Sending and taking should be practiced alternately, so you can only do them one thing at a time. So you take in trouble and then, like, you know, release goodness. Sending and taking should be practiced alternately. These two should ride the breath. And, anyway, I'm doing way too long on the recap. I went too long on these last time, and now I'm doing too long on the recap. Sorry. And then the other one, so maybe that's all we talked about in formal practice. There are several more that are worthy of study, but not for now. And then the third point we talked about last time, of the three, we talked about three. The third point was really a great one, which is using adversity. So really using adversity. So instead of seeing problems and adversity in our life as a problem, seeing problems and adversity as like an opportunity, as a teaching, as a practice. And in the point of using adversity, we talked about two slogans. First, we talked about, which we went on for a while and had a lot of reactivity to in our discussions, was drive all blames into one. And it's about blame, about the topic of blame. And Chogyam, I read a long section from Trungpa Rinpoche, and he basically said to take this very literally. To very literally, when you're in a problem with somebody, to just take the blame. To not be so convinced that we think we know what happened and that we are responsible for parts 1, 2, and 3 and they're responsible for parts 4, 5, and 6 and so I'm a good person, I'm going to take responsibility for parts 1, 2, and 3 but you know, you really need to deal with your stuff. No, we say, I am responsible for all 6 parts, I'm really sorry, it's my fault. You know, and to be the first one to actually soften the situation and create the possibility of the situation turning around. And we were able, in our discussions, to very easily imagine times when that seems like that would be a bad idea. Maybe be unskillful or confusing, or maybe like letting it, like encouraging the other person into evil action, you know, maybe it would be a bad idea. So I studied a little more about this. I mean, I'm convinced that we should try it anyway, because how are we going to find out, you know what I mean? We go into these things with so full of our hypothetical situations and thinking we know what's going to happen, right, don't we? that we actually, I think, need to try these things. We need to try taking the blame for something which we nominally think is not our fault. See what happens. But then I also studied a little bit today what Pema Chodron, who was Trungpa Rinpoche's student, said about this. So I want to read you a little bit what she said, since we had a little trouble with drive all blames into one. So therefore, it's probably the teaching we need. First, she talks about just the power of blame, and just to really feel and understand and study, you know, read the newspaper and study the power of blame. All the conflicts and wars and problems, large and small. And that one way to study this slogan is to just simply study blame. Study the incredible, pernicious power and evil of blame. And how are you interacting with blame in your life? Are you blaming people? Are you blaming yourself? How does that feel? And can we practice non-blaming? And then she says, drive all blames into one is actually a healthy and compassionate instruction that short-circuits the overwhelming tendency we have to blame somebody else. It doesn't mean, instead of blaming the other people, blame yourself. It doesn't mean that. It means to touch in with what blame feels like altogether. And instead of guarding yourself, instead of pushing things away, begin to get in touch with the fact that there is a very soft spot under all that armor. And the blame is probably one of your most well-perfected armors. So we're hiding something, we're covering something up, which she calls the soft spot. And they talk a lot about this. This is like the point where bodhicitta can emerge, that soft spot. And I think just to be like ornery and shake people up, Trungpa Rinpoche calls that a wound. You need to get in touch with your wound. You know, it's like really gross and stuff. But she goes soft spot. I think Pema Chodron is maybe a little more nice. So maybe we need both. Anyway, so she says that, and then she gives a very specific instruction, which I'm going to read you. Try this. Try dropping the object of the blame, or the object of what you think is wrong. So instead of holding it, just drop it. Instead of throwing snowballs out there, just put your snowball down and relate in a non-conceptual way to your anger. Relate to your righteousness. Relate to your indignation. Relate to your sense of being fed up or pissed off or whatever it is. Drive all blames into one is saying, instead of blaming the other, own the feeling of blame. Own the feeling of blame. Own the anger. Own the loneliness. Make friends with it. Use the Tonglen practice to see how you can place that anger or fear or loneliness in a cradle of loving kindness. Use Tonglen to learn how to be gentle with all that stuff. In order to be gentle and create an atmosphere of compassion for yourself, it is necessary to stop talking to yourself and others about how wrong everything is, or even how right everything is. And she gives us a challenge. I challenge you to experiment with dropping the object of your emotion, of your blame. Do Tonglen instead, and see if in fact the intensity of this poison lessens. And then she goes on for a while to say that she didn't think it would. So she's tried it for 20 or 30 years, and now she sees that it does. So I appreciated her mentioning that. You know, we don't take these things on faith. So anyway, I think we need to practice with this blame business. And Pema Chodron talks a lot about working with it internally, ourselves, and Trungpa Rinpoche talks with working with other people and actually literally saying, I'm really sorry. Be the first one. You know, don't wait for them to like come around. Be the one who eats the blame. This is Start Where You Are, which is a series of talks on these slogans. And Trungpa Rinpoche like goes through them very systematically one by one, like in a seminar. And she just kind of uses them as points of departure for Dharma talks. So hers is like a little more sort of general. So anyway, we talked about that last time and got all twisted up about it. So it would be good to practice with blame. And then the other... And the other thing I think about all this is, and this is so true, this is what we can bring to this as Zen students, I think, is to also really practice humility and non-knowing. That when we get in these situations of conflict and trouble, we are so convinced that we know what happened and who did what and so on and so forth. And we're proven wrong, but then we just create a new version, you know. So to practice with the non-knowing of that, with humility, like, well, I don't know what happened. And I'm upset, you're upset, so something happened. Please teach me, you know, what happened. So anyway, that was the recap. Now, on to the fourth point. I'm going to talk about the fourth and fifth point of seven. And then have some open discussion and some small groups. The fourth point is a little harder to understand. It's a long slogan. The point is called, the point is called life and death. The point is called life and death. And it's another point that has only one slogan in it. And the slogan goes, one translation from Trungpa Rinpoche is, practice the five strengths, the condensed heart instructions, the Mahayana instruction for ejection of consciousness at death is the five strengths. How you conduct yourself is important. You get all that? Not exactly. It doesn't roll off your tongue. Practice the five strengths, the condensed heart instructions. The Mahayana instruction for ejection of consciousness at death is the five strengths. How you conduct yourself is important. And then an American teacher, Alan Wallace, has a little shorter, like less literal translation of this slogan. He says, which is more helpful to me, he says, to synthesize the essence of this practical guidance, apply yourself to the five powers. To synthesize the essence of this practical guidance, apply yourself to the five powers. So in other words, to make all this stuff work that we're talking about, we need to apply ourselves to these five powers. So let's find out what the five powers are. So a lot of these teachings are essentially like lecture notes, you know, and you have to go find out what that is. So the five powers turn out to be, and these are really good, the five powers are strong determination, number one. Number two, familiarization. Number three, seeds of virtue. Number four, reproach. And number five, aspiration. Okay, strong determination, familiarization, seeds of virtue, reproach, and aspiration. So we practice these, the rest of this is all going to work better. And so will our living and dying work out better, which is kind of like the point. So strong determination is like it sounds. We're determined, you know, we're strongly determined. We're going to work with our hearts. We're going to practice steadily. We're going to keep at it. Now, it's also possible to be rigid and upset and too, you know, strong in an unhealthy way. So we're trying to be as healthy as we can with our strong determination, a healthy, positive strength in our life. So that's the first one, strong determination. The second one is familiarization. So this is becoming more intimately familiar with how it actually goes for us. So not shying away from our actual experience as is actually happening. Releasing ourselves a little bit from our fantasy of what's supposed to be happening. So noticing all the workings of our neurotic little selves and also our beautiful and transcendent big selves. Using all the tools at hand, meditation, whatever works for us, therapy, journal writing, you know, walks in the woods, to put some energy into familiarizing ourselves with what's actually happening, familiarization. You know, it's like they always say, when you first start meditation practice, it's like a little, might could be a little bit upsetting because you get familiar, a little more familiar with what's going on. So that was the third one, maybe? Second one, familiarization. A third of the five strengths, which make up the fourth point, is seeds of virtue. This is really good. It has a sort of faith element. which is like every good thing you do plants a seed, and to have faith in that. That our tendency is we plant a little seed and then we hang around to see if it's going to grow. Damn it! You know? And so this is not to do it that way. It's to plant a seed and walk away. Plant a seed and walk away. To do something helpful, to do something positive for ourselves or others. And just have faith that the seeds are going to grow. And it doesn't matter. You know, we're not too excited if it withers on the vine or if a giant beanstalk grows up. We just keep planting seeds. So seeds of virtue. And this works well with viewing all dharmas as a dream also, right? Because who knows how seeds work in dreams? You know, it's mysterious. If we're really literal about our good actions and we think every seed which we properly watered and had good intention should definitely sprout, then it's not too good. So I thought that's really good, a really good power. Seed, planting seeds of virtue. The fourth of the five powers is reproach. Is reproach, and this is another one we could easily cause trouble for ourselves. And I think that this teaching comes from a culture with a little less of a guilt thing going on than maybe our culture has. So we have to be mindful. But this is to notice when we're goofing off or creating trouble for ourselves or others, and yeah, really kind of take ourselves in hand and say, you know, don't do that. It's not good. You're creating more suffering. And our great teacher in this is our own pain and difficulty. You know, when there's increased pain and difficulty, we can notice, oh, don't do that. Let's see if we can avoid the additional pain and suffering of guilt and you know, angst and all this. So anyway, that was the fourth one, reproach. And the fifth one is aspiration. Aspiration. And this is great too. This is the world of vow. The world of vow. So when we, after the talk, when we do the four vows of the Bodhisattva, this is a great aspiration. It's like impractical, beyond sort of understanding. And like any practice, we have to do it repeatedly, over and over and over again. We're always aspiring. And aspiration is different from inspiration, right? Inspiration is conditioned upon how we feel, right? We like wait around. Sometimes we manipulate the situation. I'm not very good at this, but some people are good at this. Like we manipulate the situation so we can get inspired and then we can practice. Or we wait around and hope that one day we'll be inspired to practice. So aspiration is more sort of steady in that. It's continually aspiring. And a chanting practice, I think, is very good for aspiration. So in our class on the precepts, we made a little assignment to write ourselves an aspiration, essentially, write ourselves a little vow that we would say every day, if possible, to bring up our practice of the precepts, which means our practice. And so I've been every morning saying this little vow. And it's really been nice. And even if, like, my morning's all bunged up and I overslept or whatever, like we got in at midnight last night, so I didn't sit for more than a few minutes this morning, but I did say my little vow and started my day with aspiration. And it's quite beautiful, actually. So you could write your own, but this, or you could borrow mine. I lend it out. So what I've been saying every morning for my aspiration practice is, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, please concentrate your hearts on me. I, Nomon Doan, Buddha's disciple, greet the new day with humility and joy. May I today, in all actions of body, speech, and mind, affirm life, give generously, keep the mind clear, treasure the body, be gentle and kind in speech, open to and heal through strong emotion, and return always to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha on every breath. So I have that. I have it on a little card. I don't need to memorize it. So you could do that every morning. You could make a little vow for the day. What is your intention today? And that can be your practice of aspiration. And the great thing about aspiration and vow is that it's a sort of non-conditioned act. You know, you're just. You're not going to exactly do this or not do this. You're just bringing up this practice of aspiration and having faith that you're planting a little seed of virtue and it's going to be helpful somehow. So, those five powers are the fourth point of mind training. And these are really good, you know. These are a good thing to practice with. So the five powers again were strong determination, familiarization, seeds of virtue, reproach, and aspiration. Okay. So now we're up to four points. So I want to bring up the fifth point. So the fifth point of the 7 points, each having these different numbers of slogans in them, is called yardsticks. Yardsticks. And this is interesting because we always want to be able to evaluate how our practice is going. We would like a yardstick for our life. And so the Tibetans have yardsticks. It's great. And, you know, so how are we doing? You know, are we doing a good job? And so I want to talk about three of these slogans in the section on yardsticks. The first slogan is, of the two witnesses, hold the principal one. Of the two witnesses, hold the principal one. So the two witnesses turn out to be yourself and others. And the principal of these two is yourself. And so this is an encouragement to trust your own wisdom. So how do you measure whether you're doing all right? You just trust that you are doing all right, essentially. And you notice your orientation in your life and your practice. Practice just to practice, not to show off, not for somebody else, doing just what you need to do. I remember one of my teachers at San Francisco Zen Center, Blanche Hartman, she was always sort of self-conscious. She used to tell us she was always self-conscious about her practice because all the other students in the early 60s in San Francisco were like, you know, 22 or 19 or something and all gung-ho and stuff. And she was like 40. And she felt always a little self-conscious, like she wasn't quite fitting in or doing it right. So therefore, she tried very hard. And she was always trying hard to be, you know, do everything just perfectly, you know. And then at one point, the teacher, I think he like caught her in the hallway. You know, all great teachings actually happen in the hallway. And the teacher caught her in the hallway, a Baker Roshi, and he said, Blanche, whatever you do today, don't do it for somebody else. Whatever you do today, don't do it for somebody else. So you could try that. And it really shook her up. She realized she was running around doing all these things to impress everybody else. She didn't have like any idea what she wanted to be doing. You know, she'd completely forgotten about her own wisdom, her own needs, her own fulfillment as a human being. And what's interesting about this slogan to me is we have all this other emphasis in these slogans on forget about yourself, take care of others. Completely forget about yourself. Suck in their poison. Take the blame for all the things that are happening. So this is like kind of the balance of that, the counterweight to that. Pay attention to what is really true for you and just let go of any concern about what other people think. So here's what Trungpa Rinpoche said about this. And this is really healthy for us. We need this one. In any situation, he said, there are two witnesses, others people's view of you and your own view of yourself. Of those, the principal witness is your own insight. You should not go along with other people's opinion of you. The practice of this slogan is always to be true to yourself. You know best about yourself. You should work with yourself constantly. This is based on trusting your own intelligence rather than trusting yourself, like, you know, self, your small self. Because that self could be very selfish. So you're trusting yourself, but which self? It is trusting your intelligence by knowing who you are and what you deeply are. You do know yourself so well. Therefore, you can cut through deception. You know yourself well, so you can cut through deception. If someone congratulates you or compliments you, they may not know your entire existence. So you should come back to your own judgment, your own sense of your own expression, and the tricks you play on yourself and others. And this is not self-centered. It is self-inspired from the point of view of the non-existence of the ego, of the self. You just witness what you are. You are simply witnessing and evaluating the merit rather than going back over and over it in a Jungian or a Freudian way. So this is not like self-obsession either. So that's kind of interesting. Trust your sort of deepest heart. And how can you be in touch with your deepest heart? Practice the preliminaries, right? Practice all the other slogans. So the next slogan I want to talk about in the yardsticks department is this one. And this is great. This is, always maintain a joyful mind. Always maintain a joyful mind. Even when they're suffering or upset, to bring up joyfulness, to connect with the gift of being alive, to have such wonderful things to practice with. And this makes me think of one of the, there were many, I went on a bit about the Indian teacher, 4th century, I think, who brought these teachings to Tibet, Atisha. And Atisha was like worried about having enough bad things to practice with, goes the story. And so he was invited by a sort of regional king in Tibet to come to Tibet, and he was a little concerned because he heard that the Tibetans were like really happy and joyful, and there wouldn't be sort of enough trouble to practice with. And so the story is that he brought along this like a really difficult servant. It was like really hard to be with, you know. And there's many stories of spiritual teachers like, you know, deliberately keeping, you know, like supporting someone who's really difficult to stay in the community and cause trouble. So that we can learn about this, you know, so that we can bring up joyfulness always, you know. And also I've been, the other thing I thought about this was I've been reading Jon Kabat-Zinn lately, who's a doctor, a meditation student and a doctor. And he's a sort of big popularizer of meditation in the medical world, very successfully too, it turns out. And he quotes Zorba the Greek. Zorba the Greek knows about this point of maintaining a joyful mind. You know, I'm paraphrasing a paraphrase, but something like, somebody asked Zorba if he had kids and a house. Yeah, and you know, what's your life like? Do you have all the household stuff? And Zorba apparently said something like, oh yes, I have all of this. I have the full catastrophe. You know, and this is great. You know, this is great to have the full catastrophe. So Jon Kabat-Zinn grabbed this phrase, the full catastrophe. So this always maintaining a joyful mind is being in touch with the full catastrophe. So it requires humor, right? Things go wrong, it's funny. You know, it's pretty funny that we're so upset. And American Zen started out with a reputation which we sort of like borrowed from our understanding or maybe misunderstanding of Japan, that you're supposed to be like really like dour, you know. You're not supposed to be very joyful. So this is a good slogan for American Zen. Always maintain a joyful mind. And the last slogan I want to talk about tonight, it's also in the yardsticks point, is this. If you can practice when distracted, you are well trained. If you can practice when distracted, you are well trained. So this is a wonderful slogan. Because we will fail at this. We will fail at this. And therefore, we will have the opportunity to learn. I mean, it's one thing to set aside time, to go to retreat, to come to the Dharma Hall, to get everything organized just right, to have your nice little sitting corner, to sit down, to do your practice, to feel the support of the others. It's so wonderful. And it is. It is really wonderful. And that's absolutely excellent. But it's another thing when the phone rings. And in my case, couple days ago, the horrible thing about cell phones is you're never away, right? So the cell phone works just as well in LA as it does here, it turns out, and probably better. It's probably where cell phones work really well. And, you know, we're trying to negotiate these LA freeways, and the phone rings, and I hand it to Janet, you know, I'm that smart, you know, I hand it to Janet to deal with, and it's something to do with the Dharma Hall, and she's trying to deal with it, and I, like, take it back, you know, because Dharma Hall! My problem, you know, and it's somebody like, from my point of view, being like pretty pushy and needing all these things and like needing them today. And I'm like, I'm in LA, I can't help you. And I got really upset. And like for many miles afterwards, like wasn't even there. You know, I was still like chewing over this conversation. So I was distracted. And I'm obviously not well trained. So, yeah, when something comes up in return towards something that distracts us and surprises us and is not what we wanted, and can that be practice? What is the practice here? And there's another slogan which I skipped over before in the using adversity point, which is almost the same. And that one is, whatever you meet unexpectedly, join with meditation. Whatever you meet unexpectedly, join with meditation. So let the unexpected be your meditation teacher. And this is good for us, right? Because we basically want things not to be unexpected. We would like it to be organized and in control. We would like things to happen in the expected way they're supposed to happen. And, sometimes unexpected things are joyful and wondrous, but for the most part, not so much for us because of this setup. You know, we create a world in which the unexpected is mostly not too happy for us. And so to instead of doing that, to meet the unexpected as meditation, how wonderful. The unexpected is here. And now I can practice even more deeply than I possibly could have if things had just sort of chugged along like a train in the way I expected they would. So anyway, last slogan of tonight was, if you can practice when distracted, you are well trained. So maybe one day we'll be well trained. Wonderful. I'm distracted. I can learn from that. So that's adding a few more to our 7 points of Lojong mind training. I thought we'd get back on our weekly schedule next week. Being the first Wednesday of the month, we'll have Zazen, 2 years of Zazen, and then the health and well-being ceremony. So if there's someone in your life you'd like added to the ceremony, you can write it down or tell us. And then some kind of Zen forms training. We can do training next week. And the week after, second Wednesday of the month, would regularly be a Dharma talk, so now then I'll try to address the last 2 points of the 7. And to know that, you know, it's a little suspect of me teaching about this stuff. You know, I only just heard about it a few weeks ago. So just to wet our whistles and see if any, I think what's most interesting here is to see if any of these grab you, you know, to see if there's a pull there for you. And if there is, you know, they're not secret teachings. They're published. They're on the internet. Did I mention lojongmindtraining.com? So you can take this up, you know. Yeah, it's a wonderful website, actually. Some Buddhist geek put together this website called lojongmindtraining.com, and there's translations by 7 different teachers, cross-reference with mouse overs and little drop-downs and stuff, and it's great. I think not to feel like, no one should feel like, oh my gosh, I have to memorize this, another project, but just to listen and to see what speaks to you, and can it be helpful. And I will do the same. And I'm particularly interested in dreams and blame myself right now. And the unexpected. So I thought, in the 20 minutes that's left, hooray, left some time, we would do like we did last week, but with a little more time to actually do it. Break into groups of 3. And I think there's more copies of the handout that lists all of these slogans. Some are pretty clear just if you read them. Some are a little bit in code. It's okay. And in your group to read all the slogans from the first 5 points out loud, because that's how far we are, 5 points. And then just have a quiet, open discussion in your group of 3 people. You know, what are these for me? And we won't take turns or ring the bell or do it super formal like we do sometimes. But we could still do it with that same spirit, you know, of only one speaking at a time, not interrupting, you know, really listening, really speaking. And also, like when we do the more formal one speaking at a time with the bell, if we can also agree to hold what's discussed here quietly and privately, you know, a little confidentiality. If someone wants to share something that's important to them, they can trust that we won't, you know, go around town talking about that. Okay, does that sound okay? So maybe we'll chant now? I'm kind of like messing with the Dharma talk form. Maybe we'll chant now. It's always good to chant. We'll chant now and we'll bow. And then we'll break into these groups of three. I'll find the handout. And we can spread out around the room and the other rooms. Maybe it's 15 minutes. And then we'll come back together at 9 o'clock to close together in here. All right? And thank you. I really appreciate everybody listening and letting me learn how to do this. Because I couldn't do it without you.